Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
This is the Investor Coaching Show, Paul Winkler, along with Mr. Evan Barner. Mr. Ira Work hanging out here with me in the studio today, talking about the world of money and investing and dodging lightning bolts. Are there even lightning? I hadn't heard any thunder in a while.
No.
I think we're in the clear. I like thunderstorms.
And hopefully we don't get another flood award broadcasting.
No. I don't need any more awards for broadcasting during floods. Oh, my goodness. All right. So, yeah. PaulWinkler.com is the website, and you can get the podcast there that's downloaded right on your phone or whatever devices that you happen to use, and even turned into text that you can read if you are so inclined to do that. And, of course, the video on the website is always there, and those are our clients. We've got the, I just want to remind you that there is a place that you can go client login. You can see all those other videos there. Don't forget that. I've had to refer a lot of people to some of the videos that I've done there, many of them having been updated for, you know, estate planning, those types of things. So if you work with our firm, you know, that's another one of those little perks. We got that hidden website with some pretty cool videos on there and educational material. And somebody was asking me if I had my book in audio form. I just have not. I probably need to do that at some point. That would probably be good because a lot of people are into audio. You guys do audiobooks?
I have.
Have
my,
you?
My son does them all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, he loves it.
I just think people would be crashing listening to numbers. because I think about what do you do with all the charts that I've got in my book? There are so many charts. It's such a visual book.
Right.
I mean, it would be...
That would be tough.
Yeah, I don't know if I would do that.
I think it's better suited for narrative kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't do them for, like, business stuff.
Right,
I do it, you know, for, like, John Clancy or Stephen King.
Right,
you know, while I'm driving.
Right. So it would be hard for me, I think, to turn it into an audio.
Yeah, I would, because even like I listen to, you know, like Fox News in the car on Sirius, and they're like, okay, watch this clip. I'm like, okay, I can't do that.
Yeah, look at this chart.
Frankly, they should know that too if they're broadcasting on Sirius.
I mean, I suppose I'd have to be, well, I've been doing radio long enough, I could probably describe a chart, but it's not nearly as much fun. Okay, so guys, one of the things we ought to talk about here is... Question came about choosing a financial advisor, and I thought we'd spend a little time on this because I do spend a lot of time talking about one of my pet peeves of the investing industry is the fact that very few investment advisors actually are certified financial planners. One study said that there's not even 30% of advisors here in the U.S. that have CFP marks. I've seen lower than that. I've seen that, and I think that you're probably, if you start including other people that do ancillary type of like insurance planning and, you know,
right,
a lot of those other things, they're not even considered in that percentage. So if you start including them, you'd actually drive that number down even further.
I would think so.
I have a sneaking suspicion. But if you look at countries around the world, like Australia, they've got an advisor competency standard, and it mirrors the CFP, the Certified Financial Planner, board standards. You've got to have a degree, you have to have experience, you have to go through an exam, continue education, and there are countries around the world that are requiring this. And do you guys remember how much of the education that you went through? I mean, I'm looking at this and going, to go and spit it out and parrot it back to people is hard, but I think we forget how much. And where this comes home for me,
yeah,
is I have interviewed people before to come work for me and say, man, I just really want to be a financial advisor. And over the years, I've had many of those types of interviews.
Right.
And I'm sure you guys have as well, where somebody comes into your office and goes, hey, I would really love to do what you do. And I start asking them questions. And even when people have had, even when they've been degreed, they've had a certified financial planner degree, I find that even that is still just the beginning. And I've been amazed where people have said, numbers are really good. I'm really good at this. Financial planning, it just seems to me, it's just like breathing for me. I think this is what I need to be doing in my life. And I start asking them questions and I realize, oh my goodness, you have a long ways to go. This is not going to happen.
For sure.
And the reason gets down to the education. I think people need to have an appreciation of the types of things and listen to this with an ear to types of things that planners can help you with if they are actually degreed. You know, think of it in those terms. So one of the courses that you have to go through is financial planning roles and responsibilities. And what you're dealing with there is, you know, how to communicate techniques, behavioral finance, which is huge.
Right.
I mean, when we look at behavioral finance, one of the biggest reasons that investors get really bad returns is behavior. Because we know we should buy low and sell high.
Yeah.
It's actually not one of the reasons. It actually is the reason.
It really is, Ira. And you know, the thing that is in behavioral finance, you're dealing with so many different biases from a we're human standpoint.
Well, the reality is the one thing that any investment advisor, mutual fund manager, you know, stockbroker, the one thing they don't know is what's driving the person putting this trade in. Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to a floor trader from Merrill Lynch, and we were talking about the efficiency of the market trading system and how efficient it is, balancing trades and so forth.
Yeah.
And he said the only thing we cannot factor in are the emotions of the investors.
Yeah, and that's a biggie.
Right.
And you look at how you buy a mutual fund. You know, typically you're going to buy it because of something that has nothing to do with what future returns might be. You think it is.
Yeah.
You think that's what you're buying it for because you're looking at things that have nothing to do with performance. And that's one of the big ones is what's historical performance. You know, how recognizable is the company? How recognizable is the fund? How recognizable are the companies, the stocks inside of the fund? You think that's the driver, but it's not.
But there are other things that individual investors will look at. I remember, you know, brokers telling me, well, I look to see what insider trading is.
Sure, you think so, that would be an impact.
You know, so if Bill Gates decides to sell 10,000 shares of Microsoft, we don't know, is he doing it to buy a new yacht?
Exactly. That's a really good example. You think it's because he thinks it's going down. But it may not be it at all.
Right. I mean, when Jeff Bezos was going through his divorce, who knows how many shares he had to sell?
Sure. A great example, Ira. Another thing you learn in that course, you're talking about financial statement preparation and analysis.
Right.
Do you really get that? Probably not. Time value money concepts, applications, you might get that to some extent. But applying it may not necessarily be as intuitive as you think. Education planning, funding. How many different types of education funding? What are the caveats then when you're dealing with education funding for kids? You know, for example, what if the child ends up getting a scholarship? What are the taxes and the issues of pulling the money out if it's not for use for education purposes? What about the estate planning implications of 529s?
Right. And I think that there is also this – is this still in Section 1, by the way, financial planning roles and stuff, or are you going past
that?
Yeah,
I'm in. I'm in the first course.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? I'm in the first course.
I think this speaks to a combination of education and experience because you can learn those things. You know, you can study the test and review questions, and you could pass the course. And you might be able to say, well, here's why you want to use a Section 529 plan to fund your child's education instead of an education IRA, ABCD. But that doesn't necessarily speak to, well, about 40 states, 529 plans aren't worth the paper they're printed on.
Yeah, excellent point.
And, you know, that kind of stuff isn't covered in the curriculum, but you do need to know both. You can't just say, well, the Virginia plan gave me the best golf ball, so that's what I'm going to recommend.
And it's funny you say that because over the, past 15 years, I've had three changes in 529 plans that I've recommended to the clients.
Right.
And, you know, you know, the ones that I recommended years ago, I don't recommend anymore because there were changes in the plans.
Exactly.
And you better keep up with all that stuff. That's an excellent point. You know, so you have that, you have economics and the external environment. I, you know, that was an ace
information
that one.
Bias.
I love that one. I loved economics, but a lot of people don't really understand it quite as well as they might think, and ethics and standards of conduct, which is, you know, that's important, but you know, but not necessarily that the client needs to know that because they're not going to do something unethical for themselves. But additionally, the course offers a deep, not on purpose anyway, the course offers deeper understanding of the role and responsibilities of the financial planner, analytical skills to aid the financial decision-making process. So that's the first course. Second one.
Let me pause
ahead.
There a minute.
Yeah, man.
Because you kind of glossed over something. And I don't know if it's in that segment or a different one or, you know, topic. Even from the advisor standpoint, though, the ethics and all of that stuff, at least for CFP, I honestly don't know what your current standards are as chartered financial consultant. But we have an ongoing financial review and obligation to report any misuse of, you know, finances, or if I got a DUI, if I got a this, all of that gets reported to the CFP board. So I don't want to
we have that
brush
as a firm.
Over that.
I mean, think about it as a firm, we do. Yeah.
You know, and so, you know, every other year I have to fill out, did I have a financial struggle, did this or that? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I think there is maintaining the CFP mark and probably, you know, you do want to stay on top of that. Your person does need to be ethical, and you need to have some confidence that they are.
Yeah. Well, I was talking about that for that particular course would be important for the person, the individual.
Sure.
But if you're working with an advisor, I wasn't even thinking about that, Evan. That's a good point. If you're working with an advisor, you would hope that they have that kind of background. That's an excellent point.
Yeah.
And then you got planning for insurance needs is another one, another course that you would take. And you're getting into fundamental principles, risk management. Well, you have lots of different types of risk management. You know, I liken it to having a moat around your castle. You know, you may have a great investment program, but it's all for naught if all of a sudden there's some aspect of risk management that you didn't think about that might be applicable to you.
Yes.
Tremendously important. We spend a lot of time on that.
I'll give you an example of that, too,
sure.
though. When I was, I had a friend of mine redo all my insurance. Okay, it was with one company. Mm-hmm. He asked me, he was at my house for a party, and the person who I bought the house from, they put in this custom cabinetry in the kitchen.
Right.
He said, has your insurance guy ever been out here? I'm like, no. He said, well, you know, those are all custom cabinets. He said, you know, your typical homeowner's policy with that company is not going to cover it. They're going to cover builder grade. I'm like, well, what's builder grade? He said, basically what you buy off the shelf at Home Depot.
Mm-hmm.
So he redid all my policies. He was able to get me more insurance, lower premiums. And then it came to getting the umbrella policy. So the umbrella policy that he got me actually will pay me the $1 million if I'm hit on my motorcycle by an uninsured motorist.
Hmm. And an important thing to think about, you know, just not something that you would have. And a lot of times people don't even have umbrella policies. You know, it's they'll go, well, you know, I got this policy. And you go, well, do you know what the limits of coverage are? I don't know. And you find out that it's $100,000, $300,000. And you go, when's the last time you saw a major lawsuit, you know, where somebody got in an accident, they were at fault, where the person suing them only was looking for $100,000.
Yeah. Right. And because I drive back and forth to Florida a lot, and the billboards are like, so-and-so got a $787,000, you know.
There
and
you
have
go.
These lawsuits, you know, these billboards that say, you deserve to get paid.
Everybody's the hammer on their billboard.
But the interesting thing is, there are very few, and Brian was telling me, there are very few umbrella policies that will actually pay the policyholder if something happens to them.
Yeah, and you had disability policies used to do that too. They used to fight over showing, hey, we'll actually pay you instead of just reimbursing you. Yeah.
Now, the other thing too that Brian brought out, which I had not given any thought to, is that, you know, if your liability is $100,000, that's what your insurance policy is. It's like the insurance company pretty much writes that check.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have that $500,000, because when you buy car insurance, you're going from $100,000, $300,000 to $255,000 as base. And then you throw another $1 million on top of that.
Right.
He said for a $1.5 million claim, the insurance company is sending their lawyer.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah, not a bad thought, because they know that they could be on a hook for a lot of money.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point. And then another course that's in the CFP or Chartered Financial Consultant, either one of those designations, income taxation. So you're going to be looking at income taxes for individuals, fundamentals of income taxation, taxation of income generated from personal, professional, investment-related activities. You're dealing with deductions, credits, basis rules, depreciation, taxation of capital assets, non-taxable exchanges, passive activity loss rules. And so a lot of these things, you go like, what the heck is that? Well, right, that's the idea. And retirement planning, that's another course that you might be taking, looking at. So you're looking at IRAs, simple, SEPs, 403Bs, 457 plans, deferred compensation plans, non-qualified plans, Social Security, and employee benefits, and how to take Social Security and orders of taking Social Security, and different techniques and strategies for that. You're looking at distribution planning in that particular class, asset accumulation, what types of assets should you be putting money into? Principles of investments is another class you'd be into, and you're dealing with the securities law, market structures, and asset classifications, and taxation of investments. You've got all kinds of, you've got different investments that are taxed at different rates on the accumulation, and you need to understand the differences between those.
So,
portfolio theory, market efficiency, and so on.
So here's a funny story.
Mm-hmm.
As I was going through the CHFC program to become a chartered financial consultant, I did four or five of classes, and then I got to the investment principles class.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I've been doing this now for 8 years.
Oh, that's funny.
I didn't read the book.
What a great story.
I went in, I took the test, and failed it.
What a great story. Yeah. Isn't that's...
I went home. My wife was like, so how'd you do? I'm like, yeah, I failed that one. She's like, really? I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what my thoughts were. I've been doing this for 8 years. Why should I have to read that book?
Yeah.
Failed the test.
Yeah. There you go. Great, great example.
And something else to point out is, mm-hmm. as you're kind of going through that list, mm-hmm. both looking at the taxation and the retirement strategies,
uh-huh.
I don't know if this happens to you a lot, but we'll be in a planning session. We've been working with somebody for a couple of meetings and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go through a particular strategy, and one of them will say, well, how come my person never said anything about that? Do you run?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Well, I don't know, but
yeah,
this is certainly something that you could be doing. Why didn't they ever tell me this?
Absolutely.
Maybe because they didn't know, or they were afraid to offend you or something.
I think the bigger question that I get more often is, well, why did they do that?
Yeah.
And my answer, right. Well, I don't even know who you're talking about, so I couldn't tell you why he or she did
that. We're going to plead the fifth on that one.
Right.
And no need for me to go and disparage somebody else. I'm just going to say they didn't do it, and let's move on.
That's, right. That's the Karl Rove, I can't speak to the other person's state of mind kind of an interview.
And then, the estate planning,
yeah.
Dealing with estate planning and, estate taxation, property interests, transfer strategies during life and death and use of trust, generation skipping transfers, charitable giving, which assets should you be giving to a charity? Which should you be giving to a natural person at death?
Yes.
You don't just
and
go
in life.
Well, yeah, but in death, is often you don't think about that there are different tax treatments after
right.
you pass, and there are certain assets that if you wanted to help your church, there are some assets that are way the heck better to give than others in terms of handing stuff over and what should be in your will. And,
sure.
and because a lot of things pass outside of probate, they pass outside of your will. And, you're going to have a lot of your estate for a lot of you listening that is going to be passing by beneficiary designation. So I think it's critical just to get an idea. When you hear me harp on this idea of that it's really, and then, not only that, but you have, experience requirements to get these degrees, these designations, and, really the coursework is comprehensive. And as a person out there, you look at it and go, well, don't you just pay a whole lot more to work with a person that has that level of experience? And I would look at it and go, no. People are paying way higher management fees and expenses for way less. And that is the reality of things. And a lot of times they're paying commissions on top of that, working with these advisors, and they don't realize how much money is actually going out of their pockets and going to an advisor that is really a salesperson and not degreed, not qualified in any way, shape, or form.
Well, a mistake or a tax is going to be way more expensive than any difference in fee anyway.
And that's an excellent point.
And you don't let us charge enough anyway, so, you know.
Well, you know, volume. We've been
but seriously, we do have
the luxury of volume around
mistakes
here.
Mistakes are way more expensive than a cost of a particular advice. Bad advice, free bad advice is extremely costly.
Yeah. And the moral of the story, you know, don't discount the value of good degreed planners when you're dealing with your financial plan.
Hey, Paul here. I want to tell you about our next webinar we're hosting. It's on financial planning for families and individuals with special needs. Our very own Chad Henson is hosting the webinar, and he has a passion for helping the special needs community. So he went and got a degree in it. He's going to touch on topics like SSI, Medicaid, SSDI, Medicare, trusts, ABLE accounts, POAs. For individuals and families with special needs, having a financial plan in place that addresses those needs is crucial. So go to paulwinkler.com/webinar to sign up. That's paulwinkler.com/webinar. Or simply click the link in the show notes to sign up.
Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. If you want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there, and if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors. And confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one.